Welcome to Madison Public Library in Madison, Ohio's Theater of the Mind Halloween edition. Tonight we continue The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe. To hear more stories, like this video, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Last night we left off with the narrator describing how unhappy he is. And now we return to the second part of The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe. The disease of the Lady Madeline had long baffled the skill of her physicians, a settled apathy, a gradual wasting away of the person, and frequent, although transient, affections of the particularly cleptical character were the unusual diagnosis. Hitherto, she had steadily borne up against the pressure of her malady, and had not betaken herself finally to bed, but on the closing in of the evening of my arrival at the house, she succumbed, as her brother told me at night, with inexpressible agitation, to the prostrating power of the destroyer, and I learned that the glimpse I had obtained of her person would thus probably be the last I should obtain, that the lady, at least while living, would be seen by me no more. For several days ensuing, her name was unmentioned by either Usher or myself, and during this period I was busied in earnest endeavors to alleviate the melancholy of my friend. We painted and read together, or I listened, as if in a dream, to the wild improvisations of his speaking guitar, and thus, as a closer and still closer intimacy admitted me more unreservedly into the recesses of his spirit, the more bitterly did I perceive the futility of all attempt at cheering a mind from which darkness, as if an inherent positive quality, poured forth upon all objects of the moral and physical universe, in one unceasing radiation of gloom. I shall never bear about me a memory of the many solemn hours I thus spent alone with the master of the House of Usher. Yet I shall fail in any attempt to convey an idea of the exact character of the studies, or of the occupations, in which he involved me, or led me the way. An excited and highly distempered ideality threw in sulphurous luster over all. His long improvised dirges would ring forever in my ear. Among other things, I hold painfully in mind a certain singular perversion and amplification of the wild air of the last waltz of von Weber, from the paintings over which his elaborate fancy brooded, and which grew, touch by touch, into vagueness at which I shuddered the more thrillingly, because I shuddered knowing not why. From these paintings, vivid as their images now are before me, I would in vain endeavor to induce more than a small portion which should lie within the compass of mere written words. By the utter simplicity, by the nakedness of his design, he arrested and overawed attention. If ever mortal painted an idea, that mortal was Roderick Usher. For me, at least, in the circumstances then surrounding me, there arose out of the pure abstraction which the hypochondriac contrived to throw upon his canvas an intensity of intolerable awe, no shadow of which felt I ever yet in the contemplation of the certainty glowing yet too contrite reveries of Fuseli. One of the phasmagoric conceptions of my friend, partaking not so rigidly of the spirit of abstraction, may be shadowed forth, although feebly in words. A small picture presented the interior of an immensely long and rectangular vault or tunnel, with low walls, smooth, white, and without interruption or device. Certain accessory points of the design served well to convey the idea that this excavation lay at an exceeding depth below the surface of the earth. No outlet was observed in any portion of its vast extent, and no torch or other artificial source of light was discernible. Yet a flood of intense rays rolled throughout, and bathed the whole in a ghastly and inappropriate splendor. I have just spoken of that morbid condition of the auditory nerve which rendered all music intolerable to the sufferer. with the exception of certain efforts of stringed instruments. It was, perhaps, the narrow limits to which he thus confined himself upon the guitar, which gave birth, in great measure, to the fantastic character of his performances. But the fervid facility of his impromptus could not be so accounted for. They must have been, and were, in all notes, as well in the words of his wild fantasies. For he not unfrequently accompanied himself with rhymed verbal improvisations, the results of that intense mental collectedness and concentration to which I have previously alluded, as observable only in particular moments of the highest artificial excitement. The words of one of these rhapsodies I have easily remembered. I was perhaps the more forcibly impressed with it, as he gave it, because in the under or mystic currents of its meaning, I fancied that I perceived, and for the first time, a full consciousness on the part of Usher, of the tottering of his lofty reason upon her throne. The verses, which were entitled The Haunted Palace, ran very nearly, if not accurately, thus. In the greenest of our valleys, by good angels tenanted, once a fair and stately palace, radiant palace, reared its head. In the monarch's thorough dominion, it stood there. Never Saphir spread a pinion over fabric half so fair. Banners yellow, glorious, golden, on its roof did float and flow. This, all this, was in the golden time long ago. And every gentle air that dallied in that sweet day, along the ramparts plumed and pallid, a winged odor went away. Wanderers in that happy valley, through two luminous windows saw, spirits moving musically to a lute's well-tuned law. Round about a throne were senting, in state his glory well befitting, the ruler of the realm was seen. And all with pearl and ruby glowing was the fair palace door, through which came flowing, 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 and sparkling evermore, a troop of echoes whose sweet duty was but to sing, in voices of surpassing beauty, the wit and wisdom of their king. But evil things in robes of sorrow assailed the monarch's high estate. All let us mourn, for never morrow shall dawn upon him desolate. And round about his home the glory that blushed and bloomed, in but his dim remembered story of the old time entombed. And travelers now within that valley, through the red-litten window, see vast forms that move fantastically to a discordant melody, while, like a rapid, ghastly river, through the pale door, a hideous throng rush out forevermore, and laugh, but smile no more. I shall remember that suggestions arising from this ballad led us into a train of thought wherein there became manifest an opinion of Usher's, which I mention not too much on account of its novelty, for other men have thought thus, as on account of the pertinacity with which he maintained it. This opinion, in its general form, was that of the sentence of all vegetable things, but, in his disorderly fancy, the idea had assumed a more daring character and trespassed, under certain conditions, upon the kingdom of inorganization. I lack words to express the full extent or the earnest abandon of his persuasion. The perhaps, however, was connected, and I have previously hinted, with that the gray stones of the home of his forefathers. The conditions of the sentience had been here. He imagined, fulfilled in the method of collection of these stones, in the order of their arrangement, as well as in all of the many fungi which overspread them, and of the decayed trees which stood around, above all, in the long undisturbed entrance of this arrangement, and in its reduplication in the still waters of the tarn. Its evidence, the evidence of the sentence, was to be seen. He said, and I here started as he spoke, in the gradual yet certain condensation of an atmosphere of their own about the waters and the walls. The result was discoverable, he added, in that silent yet importunate and terrible influence which for centuries had molded the destinies of his family, and which made him what I now saw him, which he was. Such opinions need no comment, and I will make none. Our books, the books which, 4 years, had formed no small portion of the mental existence of the invalid, were, as might be supposed, in strict keeping with the character of phantasm. We pored together over such works as The Heaven and Hell of Swedenborg, The Subterranean Voyage of Nicholas Klim by Holberg, The Journey into the Blue Distance of Tieck, and The City of the Sun of Campanella. One favorite volume was a small octavo edition of the Directorium Inquisitorum by the Dominican Emmerich D. Jerome, and there were passages in Pompeius Millet about the old African satires and epagians over which Usher would sit dreaming for hours. His chief delight, however, was found in the perusal of an exceedingly rare and curious book in quarto Gothic, The Manual of the Forgotten Church. I could not help thinking of the wild rituals of this work and of its probable influence upon the hypochondriac when, one evening, having informed me abruptly that the Lady Madeline was no more, he stated his intention of preserving her corpse for a fortnight, previously to its final interment, in one of the numerous vaults within the main walls of the building. The worldly reason, however, assigned for this singularly proceeding was one which I did not feel at liberty to dispute. The brother had been led to his resolution, so he told me, by consideration of the unusual character of the milady of the deceased, of certain obtrusive and eager inquiries on the part of her medical men, and of the remote and exposed situation of the burial ground of the family. I will not deny that when I called to mind the sinister countenance of the person whom I met upon the staircase on the day of my arrival at the house, I had no desire to oppose what I regarded as at best but a harmless and by no means an unnatural precaution. At the request of Usher, I personally aided him in the arrangements for the temporary entombment. The body having been encoffined, we two alone bore it to its rest. The vault in which we placed it, and which had been so long unopened by our torches, half smothered in its oppressive atmosphere, gave us little opportunity for investigation. It was small, damp, and entirely without means of admission for light, laying at great depth immediately beneath that portion of the building in which was my own sleeping apartment. It had been used, apparently, in remote feudal times for the worst purpose of a dungeon keep, and, in later days, as a place of deposit for powder, or some other highly combustible substance, as a portion of its floor and the whole interior of a long archway through which we reached it were carefully seethed in copper. The door of massed iron had been also similarly protected. Its immersed weight caused an unusual sharp grating sound as it moved upon its hinges. Having deposited our mournful burden upon its trestles within this region of horror, we partially turned aside and yet unscrewed the lid of the coffin and looked upon the face of the tenant. A striking similitude between the brother and sister now first arrested my attention. And Usher, divining perhaps my thoughts, murmured out some few words from which I learned that the deceased and him had been twins, and the sympathies of a scarcely intelligible nature had always existed between them. Our glances, however, rested not long upon the dead, for we could not regard her unawed. The disease which had thus entombed the lady in the maturity of her youth had left, as usual, in all maladies of a strict calyptical character, the mockery of a faint blush upon the bosom and the face, and that suspiciously lingering smile upon the lips which is so terrible in death. We replaced and screwed down the lid, and having secured the door of iron, made our way, with toil, into the scarcely less gloomy apartments of the upper portion of the house. And here we stop for this evening. Don't forget to like this video and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest.